Welcome back to CodingCat.dev, where we give you cats the freshest dose of dev snacks. Brought to you by Cloudinary. Build faster with AI-powered image and video APIs. Welcome back, perfect peeps, to CodingCat.dev podcast. Today on the show, I have Randall Schwartz. How's it going, Randall?
Going well. Yeah, hi. I'm glad to be on the show. Thank you.
We were just talking about Randall's background. I think the listeners, the viewers need to know a little bit more about Crater Lake since we chatted about it so much.
Yes. This is a picture of Crater Lake, which is down in Southern Oregon. I'm Oregon native born, so I have a lot of pride for this place. We also used to vacation there like every summer. So it's the deepest lake in the U.S., something like 1,900 feet. And it's there's no inlet or outlet. It doesn't have any rivers. So that's just water coming down, sitting very still, which makes it very clear, and then evaporating. So it's an incredibly deep and blue and beautiful to see up close. And I took this picture about 5 years ago, so I'm kind of happy with it.
That's pretty amazing. What's the like area? Do you know how big around circumference wise?
It's like this on a map.
Not very big. Okay.
It's the inside of a volcano. So the volcano exploded 11,000 years ago, which is recent enough that there's actually folk tales about it that have been handed down from people that were living at the time in the area. So it's fairly recent. Yeah.
That's pretty sweet. Yeah. So Randall's here to talk all about Flutter with us today, but before we get started, I think everybody wants to know a little bit more about you and your journey. I'm curious, how did you kind of start out in the development world as a whole?
I decided at age 9 that at some point I would have to go out and get a job. My dad was pretty good at insisting that on me, and I sort of liked math, and my dad and I tinkered around in our lab with electronics. This is back when the early TTL and DTL circuits were first hitting the market. This is a long, long time ago. And so I decided that since I liked both electronics and math, that I probably could get a job in computers someday. Now, this we're talking 1975-ish sort of. 74-ish sort of. So what were computers back then? Basically just large businesses and government. And I thought maybe I could get a job in something like banks or government or something someday. Little did I know how fast they would take off. But I trained myself. I wrote my first code for hire in 1977. Never went on to college. Basically went right into industry at age 16 and worked for a number of years as a technical writer, which was the only job available at the moment at the biggest employer in Oregon, and ended up transitioning eventually over to the software side of the same company. Worked for a couple of startup companies for a couple of years. At one of those, it was all small talk. Small talk was the key. And so I learned object-oriented programming and graphical user interfaces in 1982 from the original Smalltalk 80 image. So I have that as my background, which sort of feeds into Flutter, which is why I mention it. But then I went off and I saw this new little computer language called Perl coming along, and ended up getting pretty fluent in it and starting to help a lot of people online about it, which sort of comes to me naturally these days. And ended up writing the Camel book, which became the authoritative Bible for using Perl. Perl helped enable the interactive web, which enabled the commercial web, which enabled the dot-com boom. And we're all here because of that, ultimately, if you look back in the history. So in a sense,
I think in my research during like right about that dot-com boom bubble bust age, you had a pretty cool thing called gamesdomain.com. Is that right?
Oh, yeah. Gamesdomain.com. I was making fairly decent money running the largest Perl training company in the world. So I had 5 instructors running around on my behalf. We were charging $20,000 a week for, unlimited number of students. Well, 20 students, because more was unpractical. But and I was getting a cut of that. So I was getting some good cash, and one of the guys I was talking to online in IRC one day says, I want to mirror gamesdomain.co.uk. I want to mirror it into the US, but I need some capital to invest in buying a Sun machine that I can put on the net. And I said, okay. Wow. So I got in as a partner on that. So that's just one of my craziest historical things in there. But Pearl was very, very good for me. In fact, it wasn't until a few years ago that I stopped taking Pearl clients. You know, so I've been doing Pearl work all the way up to the time I first started with Flutter, but we'll get back to that in a second.
Sure.
But I became like one of the lead dogs in the Pearl community. I then also got an opportunity to start hosting a video podcast called Floss Weekly. I did that for 13 years, and I got to interview the movers and the shakers, the big players in the industry. So I helped chronicle how the open source eventually became like a given pretty much at every company now. So that was part of my work to do that as well. And gave that up a few years ago to get my 5 hours a week back that I was putting into that. You know how much work it takes to do this. And I was right there being that guy too.
People should note, like, if you haven't heard of Floss, they probably have heard of twit.tv though. Which TV, also Leo Laporte, right? Am I off?
Yep.
So Leo Laporte used to be on the G4. It's been a minute. My mind's a little. So G4 TV and that whole piece kind of all became Twit and the massive like streaming or like podcasting version that Twit became. So Floss was a huge part of that, which is incredible. So
Floss was on for a total of, I think, 16 years. After I gave it up, it finally got shut down a few weeks ago, except one of my co-hosts asked for permission to use the name and is now continuing the numeric sequence. So logically, it's still alive. It's just not a Twit anymore. So, and unfortunately, I can't remember the domain name. He's going to kill me for not remembering this. It's Hacker something.
When you remember it later, we'll put it in the show.
Yeah. Thank you. Right. That's how embarrassing is that, that I can't remember the name of the people that took over the show. Anyway. About 10 years ago, we're getting to the Flutter part now. About 10 years ago, I discovered Dart, and Dart made me think of Smalltalk because a lot of the same core design decisions were made, but I knew that Dart was just at that point, it was just designed to be a smarter JavaScript. So this is before TypeScript. So we wanted something that was a better syntax and didn't have a lot of JavaScript's warts. So I got involved with that, started teaching classes on that, really enjoyed playing with it. And then along came Angular Dart. And this was Dart converting to JavaScript with a good enough framework that you could simply build entire applications. Angular Dart and Angular TS actually are from the same original code base. And they just compiled it two different ways to spit it out as TypeScript or as a Dart. And I was all gung-ho about wanting to build with this and teaching this and stuff. Same thing I had done for Pearl. And my friend Wim Wheeler, who I've known for 30 years here in Portland, was working at the time down in the downtown Portland Google office. And so I thought, well, I should go visit him and tell him about this Angular Dart idea. And maybe he can help me get connections inside Google to do that, because he's working for Google. Well, I had a meeting with him. And the first thing he said is, you don't want to do anything with Angular Dart. He couldn't explain to me at the time, though, but he knew this, that Google was going to pull external support back in for Angular Dart. Well, effectively leaving it abandoned, but open for somebody else new to take it over, and people have. So NG Dart is the successor to Angular Dart. But what Wim did for me instead is he walked me over to his desk, and he showed me a Flutter, really, really early pre-1.0 Flutter with Hot Reload. And the moment I saw Hot Reload, I went, this is game-changing. And he looked at me and he said, we know. And so I went home, I installed Flutter on my machine that night, and this is back when we had to use an Eclipse plugin to edit the code. We used Dartium, which was Dart embedded in Chrome as the way of executing it. And you could also create binaries on I think you could create binaries on Mac. I can't remember all the sequence of things on there, maybe only on Linux, but it was pretty darn limited. But I had an icon on my phone that didn't come from the store. And I hadn't ever thought about getting into mobile, but all of a sudden I wrote something that's on my phone.
Right.
And I thought, well, he's right. This is game changing, right? And so I started boning up on Flutter. I presented a talk at Scale, I think, it was like 5-6 years ago. And as sort of along that path, Wim said, you know, they have this thing that they're that we've called Google Developer Experts.
Yep.
And they're just starting to enroll people for the Dart and Flutter version of that. Is that sound interesting to you? And I asked him what it all entails. And he said, basically, you're unpaid DevRel. You get to go out and talk about this to everybody, and you get some resources and access, early access to stuff and inside information sometimes. And we're under an NDA, of course, but it's great because it helps focus what I need to do and can do. And as long as
there's not a global pandemic, they'll like send us places too.
yeah, that kind of works. That works better that way. Right. So that was really, really exciting for me as well. So I applied and went through the rigorous interviews and got accepted. So I've been a Dart and Flutter GDE for 5.5 years now. Since they made me a web GDE for the first 6 months, even though that wasn't part of my interview, only because they didn't have Dart and Flutter yet established in the system. So it was like I'm in the first batch.
Nice.
And so then I've been seeking full-time employment, doing Dart and Flutter work, but also more particularly what seems to occupy a lot of my time still is that I spend a lot of time on Discord and Slack and Stack Overflow and Reddit answering questions for people. So that there's twofold for that. One is, of course, that it helps the community because now there's somebody answering questions, but it also helps me because the more questions I answer, the more I know.
Yeah.
And 100%. So it really helps in the teaching on that. And about 2 years ago, I got invited to join the Hump Day Q&A AMA sessions. And so I started out just kind of being off in the corner, and now I'm officially the question magician, which means that I'm watching the live chat that we have for the 2-3-4 hour sessions that we do.
Yep.
Simon, you got to stop at some point. You know, I got to go to lunch, right? So there's all that happening all the way up. And that kind of brings you up to date with me and Flutter.
I love it. That's perfect. And it's a perfect timing because we're going to jump out for a little ad break and pay the bills. And when we get back, we're going to do a deeper dive into what's happening in the Flutter space. So thank you, Randall.
Cloudinary allows you to remove any unwanted backgrounds so you can reuse assets efficiently. You can also erase objects and people from images for placement in new experiences. For more engaging content, easily turn static images into dynamic animations and rely on smart cropping to always deliver assets with a focus on the most relevant objects to your brand. Cloudinary Programmable Media. Build faster with AI-powered image and video APIs.
Huge thanks once. Oh, dun, 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 nice. Dun, 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 huge thanks once again to Cloudinary for not only sponsoring the podcast, but always hosting all of our images and videos since day one of Coding Cat. So thank you again.
Way cool.
Randall. Dash, right? Yeah, and I think if I have
him hidden somewhere. Behind me. There he is. Made you get up.
These you'll often see together, I believe.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That's flame, right? That's the flame.
So that's okay, this is the Firebase kind of side. Oh, I'm pointing the wrong way. Firebase side to the Flutter. So
sure. Okay. Yes. That's my coveted dash. You can't get those except by being in special places at special times. And unfortunately I didn't get mine before COVID. So I had to beg them to just send me one. So finally they sent me one. I said, And they actually asked, how have you been a GDE for like 3 years now and haven't got a one?
Right.
Never went to any of the meetings at the right time. So, yeah. but I haven't.
I finally like bagged and they sent me one. And then I think literally we're just coming out of COVID, even though we're not out of COVID, kind of able to travel finally. And we did, I think it was a Firebase event or a Google event. And like, you had to do this little, like, figure out how Firestore is open to the world and you can win this. And I was like, all wow. this time of begging, and like immediately all these other people got it, and I didn't even take one because I was like, I know how hard this is to get. You guys go ahead and take it.
Yeah.
So Flutter in 2024, we've come a long ways. I think we're on like 3.7 ish now.
3.19 just got released.
See, I'm way off. I don't spend a lot of time in the Flutter world. I always want to. It's always something that's very interesting to me. So Randall's going to kind of break down more of this for us and kind of where things came from in Flutter and the reason that they are the way they are today. So the first one I kind of want to talk about performance-wise, have you seen a big change in Flutter in more recent years around the performance side of things?
It's been getting better and better with each release. They've been focusing specifically on trying to get less jank in startups, because it's like animations take a while to compile and things take a while to get rendered initially. So there's a at least already mature and in production on the iOS side is Impeller, which is a brand new engine that replaces the previous engine, which was Skia, which was the rendering engine that came from Chrome, because the original Flutter project was sort of a spinoff of the Chrome project. And so that's helped quite a bit in terms of performance and increased up. But there's always been slow or small incremental updates. Flutter Web, for example, is getting faster and faster because the Dart compilation is getting better. And so things are taking fewer steps to generate things. But yeah, it was already plenty fast. And unless you're doing something stupid, you can easily get 120 frames per second animation on those devices that support it. So it's way faster than React Native. But did I say that out loud? Okay. Anyway.
Well, so you kind of hit a nice subject, because I had someone on that we sat down and we did a expo live coding. I'm curious, have you done a lot of comparisons between the two, or do you mainly just stick on the Flutter side of things?
I managed, again, because based on the story I just finished relating, I wasn't in mobile before Flutter. Sure. So I didn't have to suffer some of the pain that my friends have suffered in terms of learning iOS or learning Android or all that stuff. I know enough of it to interface with it from an app, but now they've made that even more and more simple. It's just, with each new release, it's getting better in terms of interoperability. But I only can tell you about things about React Native that I've seen other people talk about. So I don't have direct experience with React Native, and I probably don't want it anymore. I don't think I'll ever need it.
Coming from a web developer myself, looking at what came out or is in the most recent expo, I was pretty blown away that they have like file-based routing and things like that are coming out, and like going from Next.js to React Native in Expo was like pretty simple. I think the hardest part for me on the Flutter side is always just understanding like all of the widgets and like, Dart obviously being completely separate too. But do you find for newer devs that you've worked with that are coming from the web world, are there any like gotchas or like moments where they have that like, aha, I get it now? What does that usually take for people?
Well, one thing to understand about Flutter Web is that Flutter is essentially wanting to own and can update every pixel on the screen. And this is required. They're essential to be effectively like a game engine works. You paint the entire screen, and then you have widgets that paint themselves within that framework. And because of this, if you view source on a Flutter app, you're not going to see anything. And that also means the crawlers don't see anything. So you don't get Google indexing or anything like that at all. There are some considerations about how to do something like that. So that's being looked at. But if you're really looking for an equivalent for for the Dart Flutter environment that works more like, say, React Native, where there is native elements, you can use Jasper, J-A-S-P-R. That's in the pub, and that's essentially a Dart-based widget framework that is comparable to like Vue and React, and it generates actual HTML so that the crawlers can read it. They recognize Ahrefs, so to follow new links and everything. So if you're wanting that, that option is available already. And Jasper is already production ready and does server-side rendering, or you can have it hosted on static platforms with client-side only. It's pretty amazing. Oh, and also hybrid, where you can actually have proxy objects that are automatically synchronized. So pretty good stuff.
I guess it's been a minute since I did some of these tutorials. I thought there was kind of like two versions of Flutter that Flutter Web now produces. And one that you were kind of talking about is like canvas based. So you don't get all of the actual divs and HTML and stuff like that. But I thought it was able to produce just out of like raw Flutter, native Flutter, whatever you want to call it, without any packages, actual HTML out of there too. So that's something I'll have to take a look at.
Flutter Web can talk to the DOM.
Okay.
That's always been available. But the problem is that Flutter isn't compiling into DOM elements, except for the big one called the rendering square. That's really the only element that's there. Now that's not scrapable because it's just pixels.
Cool. That makes sense. Cool. I like this Jasper. So I'll show it on screen real quick. It's got a cool mascot. If I was actually showing my screen, one sec. So we got this sweet Jasper puppy here.
Oh, yeah.
Looks like he has a Dart earring, maybe.
I don't know.
Oh, I'm in the wrong layout view. There you go. That's pretty fun. I like that.
Yep.
I do like the call out on here too about being able to be more like Vue or React or anything like that. That's pretty neat.
Yep. In fact, my website is going to eventually be written in Jasper, so I'm getting smarter about it every day. So it's like I set aside maybe 30 minutes or 15 minutes a day to keep moving forward on that. So soon. That's really cool. Right now it's all Perl. It's Perl and Template Toolkit. So it's still old school. And it's like I'm moving away from Perl. I'm trying to figure out.
that is amazing how far you were able to run with Perl. That's really cool.
Oh, yeah. Still running a lot of big websites, and that's pretty amazing. Yeah.
I'm curious from a Flutter standpoint, when we talk about like Flutter Web is where I'm mostly interested, but have you done a lot surrounding kind of the desktop or other environments to kind of put out the output to? I don't even know if that's the right way to phrase it.
Let's talk about the history just a little bit there. Yeah. So originally Flutter was a way to have a different way other than just straight Android to be able to have Google have some sort of platform for their Android devices. And this came about partially because of the discussions that were going on between, the lawsuits that were going on between Google and Oracle about the ownership of some of the headers that are in Android. And so they were worried that Java would get pulled out from under them and stuff. And so they had to have a different platform, which is part of where Flutter came from originally. And so originally Android replacement only, then they said, well, as long as we're already separate, or as long as we're already an independent language, why don't we go ahead and port this also to iOS? So that was sort of their initial public thrust, was having both of those systems. Web didn't come along until about a year and a half later. And it was mostly just originally a proof of concept where they said, well, hey, we can take the same, as long as we have a canvas, as long as we can write pixels somewhere, that's already built into Flutter to then use that as a rendering layer. And then it became a pretty workable proof of concept. And that's what we now have today in terms of Flutter Web, but it was mostly just to demonstrate it. One of the other downsides of Flutter Web is that it has to download this effectively Skia, but written in JavaScript. So, and eventually going to be compiled with WASM, but that's another story. But we're waiting for that to happen too. But that means you've got an initial page load time, even before first paint, of something like 1 or 2 seconds on a typical network connection. And so it's not as suitable. It's not as friendly. It's great for Flutter apps when you want to have like a web app that has, you don't mind a couple seconds startup time with a spinner or something. And then you're actually there. And as long as you're bouncing around within the app, you're not loading new pages all the time. It fits that pretty well. For anything else where you're loading different pages and only crawling through various places, then obviously you'd want to use something more like Jasper for that. Gotcha. So Flutter Web got added, and then they started looking at desktop. And so, again, macOS, Linux, and eventually Windows all got sort of, workable systems. But there's been a lot of work over the last couple of years to improve the usability of those things. And it's almost at the point now, there are a number of Windows apps in the Windows Store, a number of macOS apps that are in the Mac App Store that are all in Flutter, and you wouldn't know it because it's that close to being the same fidelity and the same user experience. There are still a lot of work to do, particularly around multi-window support. So the mobiles are moving to foldables and stuff. So that already is driving some of the multi-window support. And recent versions of Flutter have gotten rid of some of the singletons and replaced them with data structures to say, well, now that I have multiple windows, I can't just have the window object. So that change has been slowly moving forward. And that's what's also going to be enabling multi-window support on desktop as well. Desktop has been taken up pretty nicely, though. Canonical provides a design kit that makes it look just like standard Ubuntu. Oh, so you have all the same widgets. In fact, the installer in Ubuntu today is in Flutter, and you'd never know it. Wow. It's that close and clean already. So I'm pretty really excited cool. about that. So that means you have multiple platforms that you can use. You can use iOS, Android, web, all three desktops. And embedded, so there you can compile this down and run it as ARM code on a Raspberry Pi, for example, for attached displays. Again, it only makes sense when you're trying to drive pixels, because that's what Flutter is, a pixel engine. But you can also use Dart for running applications on all of these platforms. And so that's also becoming quite handy.
If I were to compare Dart to something like Rust, what's the comparison there? What level of language is it?
Dart is deliberately boring.
Okay.
It was designed to be a simple replacement originally for JavaScript. And so it didn't even, all it had was duck typing originally. It had runtime type checking and no compile time type checking. That was the early Dart that I started playing with initially. But then they added sound type safety, which meant that the compiler would then reject trying to store a number into a string at compile time rather than runtime. And that was sort of Dart going through one of its, what I like to call 45-degree course changes. Okay. So old code would still work, but you really ought to be writing it in the new style. And then the next 45-degree course correction was about a year later, and it was null safety, which meant that unless you specifically said a variable can hold null, it can't. And so the type strong safety for null checking was introduced in Dart 2.12, I think it was. And then only recently, we've gotten rid of all the pre-null safety code out of the compiler to eliminate having two sets of code processing, depending on whether you're running null safe or not. So Dart 3 gets rid of all that, but also gave us patterns and records. So now what that means is that we can have abstract data types that can be pattern matched and data extracted from those in a much more coherent and easy to read syntax, including for a list of case switch elements. And that's really cool too, because it means you haven't left a case out. If you have, if you know that there's only seven possible types, you make sure every one of them hits. And so patterns and records give us tuples. So that means we finally can have arbitrarily typed subsets of data. And those are also immutable. So that means you can pass it around and know that nobody's messing with your data structure remotely. So that all came out in Dart 3. And again, another 45 degree change. The problem with doing three of these 45 degree changes in the 5-6 years that people have been playing with Dart is that any documentation for Flutter or Dart that's over a year old is out of date.
Sure.
All books are out of date. I hate to say this because people make money selling those books, but
that could be a great thing, right? I mean, here's your new version.
Well, that's what you have to do, though. But the problem is that I know with book production cycle time is about a year for concept of getting it out. And by that time, Flutter's already made two releases and Dart's made another release possibly. Yeah. So it's a little scary these days. Even online distributors like Andrea Risotto, a fellow GDE, is constantly updating his courses so that it matches the current releases. And it takes time and it takes energy. And you've got to make sure you can get enough sales out of that to justify your time if that's what you're up for.
Totally. Yeah. I want to dive back just a little bit just because I jumped too far forward. We were talking about like different device types and things like that and operating systems that I could come out on. Something that I always thought was going to happen that I haven't quite seen yet, only in a small instance, was that Google was going to release this massive thing called Fuchsia. So Fuchsia OS, right? That basically Flutter was going to be the primetime thing running on it. I've only seen that on the Google Home display, whatever that's called, I think. Do you have any insights around Fuchsia or like where Flutter might end up in there?
Well, if you recall back to the earlier part of this conversation where I was talking about the whole Google versus Oracle issues, Fuchsia was also part of that process because if Android and Java became unavailable, there had to be an alternative that they could quickly switch to. So Fuchsia was them putting time and energy into it. My understanding anyway, I don't have this from inside information. This is like just my looking at how all the processes worked.
Sure.
But Fuchsia looked like their bet on what to do if all of a sudden Android machines had to pay a per unit royalty to Oracle. And the Fuchsia could completely replace that. Fuchsia is still available. Fuchsia is being used in the play machines. So the home machines, I mean. And so it's still out there. It's still being used. And you can still download it and make it your top level operating system on your Chromebook. So it's still out there. It's just... It has been somewhat de-emphasized as time has gone on.
And so like your feeling around that was like, if Oracle really pushed and lawsuits and all that fun would have taken off, we'd probably see Fuchsia would have taken off even further. Okay. That makes sense to me. I always kind of wondered what happened.
It's possible that Fuchsia could have completely replaced Android as an example. And because Fuchsia can already run Android binaries.
I always wondered like why that switch never kind of took off. So I know it's expensive to like run and create an OS too. So, I mean, there's that side of it as well, but yeah, very cool. So tooling, let's talk about tooling improvements in 2024 and what other cool things that you've noticed. Are you still Android Studio when you're doing Flutter? Are you VS Code? What's your tooling platform of choice and what are you using?
I recommend, and I personally do this, I'm running VS Code as my primary interface. It's probably because I hang out with Dan Tuppany online, the guy who created the extensions for Dart and Flutter for that. Great support, great having the Discord there. Sad to say that JetBrains does their own plugin for Android Studio and for IntelliJ. And I've heard stories that bug reports don't get processed quite as fast as they do with Dan, but I've just heard stories. I don't know. I don't have any personal bias against that. I do install Android Studio though, because I needed to create Android emulators correctly. I know you can do it on the command line, but it's hard. So that's about the only reason I invoke Android Studio is to create another emulator. And then I can launch it and invoke it from directly from VS Code.
Nice. Yeah. So in all the tutorials that I've run through, usually during like dev week or dev, whatever it's called, dev fest time, I guess. Now it's like 6 months long, whatever it is. So when we would run those for our Google developer group and stuff, I was always using VS Code and always very happy with it too. So I think that's a good space. Any other like tooling you would recommend from a database or anything like that?
There's there's a new project called IDX that Google is essentially doing. IDX allows you to have a browser experience that's basically running VS Code, and then gives you a Linux instance behind the scenes. So I know this has been done by Google has something kind of like this already anyway, and I think on like Amplify, you can have this sort of remote development environment as well. But so basically with the Linux instance running behind the scenes, I can run like a Flutter stack and have it work properly for compiling it and making it load out. And it has a web window on a web panel on the VS Code. So I can watch Flutter web and see how that's compiling. But just recently, they've added both an Android emulator on the, in the web, and a and an iOS emulator. Wow. So you can essentially the iOS one's a little weird because they're running it all to be legal. They're all running it in the background on Apple hardware, which is firing up a separate unit. Sure. And then compiling it, so you don't get hot reload, because if you save, it's about 30 seconds before the iOS pops up with your change.
Yeah, I would imagine the DX on that's a little rough.
Yeah, so it's I don't. This is just as it is now. It might get better in the future. I don't think it can get much better. However, this is a great way if you just have if you don't want to buy Apple hardware, but you want to debug your app in iOS. You can already build it on things like CodeMagic and GitHub Actions. But if you don't have direct access to a machine, this is a little awkward. You can't really debug an iOS without having access to one of those. So this might be a solution for that. IDX is more than just that, though. IDX has also got a built-in, I guess they're going to call it now, Gemini AI tool that comes along with it. So it's the equivalent of a copilot setup directly in the browser.
Yeah. So completion that's with AI.
Right. And they and also the they're supporting multiple templates. So Flutter is only one of the templates, but you can also have like a full React Native setup and things like that. So you do have access to other things. So IDX is not just going to be Flutter, although Flutter was one of the first candidates to get it to work.
Yeah, I've actually used Next.js and Angular on IDX. I think I was on their alpha testing team or whatever us GDs get access to. Very cool product. I really enjoyed it, but I still have a hard time not jumping out to VS Code to use it. I don't know why. It's probably just because I'm used to it.
Well, when I first started using VS Code, I ran it with Emacs key bindings because I'm an old Emacser. And when I realized you could just type dot on a GitHub repo and get a VS Code on the screen, I went, okay, I can't put my fancy key bindings on this now. I'm going to have to finally learn the VS Code native key bindings. And so I finally retrained my brain. There's still a little bit of me in every copy of Emacs that ships, though, because I wrote the pretty printer for GNU Emacs Lisp. I wrote the pretty printer. Richard Stallman called it brilliant and immediately asked for a copyright assignment. So yes, there's a little bit of me in every copy of Emacs.
That's really cool. I love people that have been in software and engineering for so long. Like, your story is unbelievable to me. So completely switching gears at this point, I have a bullet note in here, and I don't know how far we want to dive into it, but I noticed in a lot of your content, you talked about RiverPod. Can we chat about kind of what RiverPod is and if you're still using it today?
Oh, yeah, I'm using it every day. In fact, I was just coding some stuff earlier today that involved RiverPod. So state management is when you need to have data that is locatable and observable, which means that you have to have a way to name where it is, and then also a way to know when the value changes. And the point of having this sort of shared state, this sort of state management, is that you can then have a view that depends on a model, and then you have ways to do PubSub where you can update the model and it will automatically trigger rebuilding all the views that have depended on that global data. And right. So there's a lot of players in this space. There's Block, there's the original provider, there's also some built-in stuff like value notifiers and stuff. But RiverPod started as taking a look at all of those systems and saying, you know, I bet we can do better. I bet we can start over and get the same mechanism, but enable it not just for Flutter, but even for pure Dart applications. That's one of the key features of RiverPod. It's really the only one out there that has any sort of maturity that works even in a pure Dart environment. So I've used it for applications where I needed observable data that needed to be shared amongst various parts of my asynchronous processes inside my Dart app. And this was just the obvious way to do that. RiverPod was done by Remy Rousselet, who also did Provider. So he learned using Provider sort of as the basis, like, okay, what are the best things about this? What are the worst things about this? And he's been taking that knowledge and making RiverPod better and better every day. So nice. RiverPod's also gone through a few 45-degree changes and course corrections. So again, some of the old RiverPod legacy documentation and legacy work still runs, but you really ought to be updating to the modern RiverPod 2 and soon to be RiverPod 3. I probably shouldn't give away too many hints, but I also hang out on a Discord with Remy himself. So that's a lot of fun to find out what's going on.
I think you should give them away.
Yeah.
We can do hot takes all day. It'd be great.
Yeah. Yeah. So RiverPod again is basically a way of having data that can be registered as a subscriber and then updated by publishers. And so it's a pub sub rendezvous point in your apps. And it's also a way, the pub sub can also work in layers. So they're very composable. A RiverPod provider, unfortunately overlap in the terminology between that and provider, but RiverPod provider can consume other providers. So you can have a network of cascading all the way through as different values depend on different other combinations of values and so on. So it's really like a universal data toolkit where you have data dependencies. And its final feature that I'll talk about, otherwise it's an entire RiverPod show, is that it's also for testing, allows you to replace providers with other providers that provide mocked values or more instrumented values and so on. So that means that in testing, you can do better with something like RiverPod than, say, maybe your own homegrown solution or maybe one of the solutions that doesn't have quite that kind of mockability.
Sure. Cool. It reminds me of all the different options for state and like something like React or, you know, Angular, even now that they've kind of shifted to I want to say runes, which is signals as well. So it's kind of interesting. Always aiming to figure out state and where we head with it.
Mm-hmm.
We're probably coming up on time a little bit, but I wanted to double check with you. Is there anything else we missed around Flutter in 2024 that you can think of?
There's a roadmap that's published every year. And I just was reviewing the one for 2024, which only came out like last week. So there was the big AI announcement last week that Flutter and Dart would be first class supported by the things Google's doing with Gemini. And that was a big thing, sort of, because the REST API is trivial to do in Flutter. So it's like there are already like a dozen packages that were doing, they're talking directly to what is now called Gemini. And so that was already there. And then, so the announcement that there'd be also be an official package from the Flutter team that did Gemini was like, yeah, okay. I mean, we were already doing it with REST. It was fine. We had it already, but it also means that in the test labs, the, kitchen, whatever it's called, test kitchens, AI labs, yet you now have a button called show me Dart and Flutter code that can do this, as opposed to just like JavaScript and the other ones. So this is nice that it's being graduated to a first class participant in that sort of things. So that was sort of a big thing on the announcement. The There's a lot of stuff in progress. Actually, you can put the show link to the roadmap.
Yeah, there's something on here called Blank Canvas. I don't know if you know much about that.
I just read that minutes ago, actually. Yeah, and it looks like what they want to do is make a base package that design sets can leverage so that they use a lot of common code. Because now you've got the stuff that looks like Ubuntu is one style, and you've got the stuff that looks like Mac OS is another style. And they're either starting on top of material or even going all the way down to just widget level. And it would be nice, since all of these design systems have a lot of commonality, to have like a common base layer for this. And I think that's the point of that package, or the point of that discussion.
Yeah, there are a lot more than I actually knew there were. So a lot of them based on material. So
they left out the Windows 95 one. There actually is a Windows 95 package.
I have to tell you, I saw something the other day and I was like, oh, XP. I kind of missed the old XP look.
Yeah.
Oh, let's see. We've got multiple Flutter views. We kind of talked a little bit about that, I believe. Yeah. SEO, Flutter Web. So that's good. It's always good. So hopefully that'll help out some of those issues.
Well, yeah, the answer is mostly, if you scroll all the way to the bottom, is you should use Jasper or something. Yeah. So
I like it. Cool. So I'm going to jump into something. I forgot to warn you about this, or ask you about this before we got started. So at the very end of the show, we do something called Perfect Picks. As you know, we got to stick with the cat theme. So these are picks that just something fun that you saw recently, or something you bought online, or anything like that. I'll do mine. So you like take a second and think about it, and we can add it in. So I have been watching since the start of this season. Actually, I've watched all the seasons, but I've been watching True Detective, and this season 4 one, I have loved it. Like, I thought season 1 was like the best. Season 4 might overtake that one for me, maybe not, but like they're right there together. Season 2 and 3, I don't know. I have mixed feelings on those, but season 4, it just ended as we're recording this right now, and wow, like, go check it out if you like it. Definitely not for the kids. Watch this. It's grown-up time on this show, I always like to preface with. But that's my pick for the week. Randall, did I give you enough time?
Almost. I thought I should probably do something sort of Dart and Flutter related. But maybe just something random, because it also affects me hopefully soon, is that I discovered that the largest manufacturer of pinball machines in the world added online connectivity to their machines. So Stern now has, essentially, if the local establishment has Wi-Fi, their machines can be online, and there's apps that go with that. Wow. And I didn't know this. And just for grins, once I discovered this, I started going into my local karaoke bars that I do three nights a week. And sure enough, there are three or four Stern machines there in every one of them. And all of a sudden, I could register for that. It could keep track of my high scores. It could let me know when there's other people around that want to play, all this sort of stuff. And I went, wow, what a great overlap between technology and classic. I mean, I was playing pinball when I was 11, you know, back That's in the awesome. Early days. And so now this is a great overlap, and now I'm going to be going back and going, oh, it's pinball time again.
I don't know why I have this feeling, like, in talking with you, but like the kind of the old coding days and how great they were, and the dot-com bubble burst, and now pinball machines. Like, I need to go watch Tron now. Like, I have to. Like, that's on the list for tonight. I'm going to go watch it. So,
Discs of Tron, excellent machine if you can get the wraparound one.
Oh, really?
Discs of Tron, because the sounds are right there in your head you're playing, and it's a really zen game because it's about bouncing discs off. Oh, Discs of Tron, excellent video game. Sadly, I think it's by Williams, not Stern, but it's okay. Stern's still the number one, so it doesn't matter.
Very cool. Well, Randall, I super, super loved our chat. I loved your talk, everything you're doing out there. I'm happy that you've made the switch over to Flutter. So I think you'll be able to add so much to that community, and keep rocking, man. Appreciate it.
Thank you much. Thank you for having me on.
All right. Take care.